Welcome to Reality TV, the podcast where we cringe watch all the shows we love and love to hate. I'm Jody, your source for snarky reality TV recaps from all the networks across the board. No one is off limits as I dissect even the tiniest details of our favorite train wrecks. Be sure to follow up between episodes on Twitter and Instagram at Reality TV Pod. Snark with me and fellow listeners on Facebook in the Reality TV Podcast Orchard of Snark group. And for nitty-gritty, unfiltered me, check out bonus episodes at patreon.com/realitypod. All right, let's get to the good stuff. Hello, hello. Back for another week of Teen Mom OG. This week was a topsy-turvy ride of emotions between all the girls. I felt less stable than Farrah watching this. It was like they were all trading places and worries, and then we had Tyler all up in the episode with his issues. You know, we're only human, MTV. You gotta feed it to us slowly. You know, we're not Gary, for Christ's sake. So let's begin with Farrah. Or rather the body double, who is posing as Farrah, but more on that later. Farrah and company are still in Italy. Farrah, Sophia, Michael, and Amy are going out, so they ditch Deborah so she can wander the streets of Positano by herself. Now, I'm not entirely sure, but I think the locals thought they had all died and they were in the same heaven that was in Pixar's movie Coco, because Deb's face is so pulled and bug-eyed. She looks like a wax museum came to life and she's just haunting Positano in search for baby goop. Farrah takes the group to a local pottery place, and there's this nice sculptor lady who's made a female bust of, well, I don't know if it was supposed to be Farrah, but if it was, it was awfully generous. And she asks the group to start massaging this lump of clay. And Farrah just quickly assigns her to babysit Sophia now so she can go talk to Michael. First, real nice to leave Amy and the Italian sculptor to watch your daughter. You think that they want to be left alone with Sophia and a 2,000-degree kiln? Second, it's not suspicious at all that you're just taking Michael alone to talk. Way to ruin that surprise proposal, right? Well, Farrah and Michael start talking about how he should propose. I don't understand why Farrah is the one planning the whole thing, and I also don't understand why Michael thinks he's in Jamaica. This is the second red striped t-shirt I've seen him in. I'm convinced he thinks that they are really in a big all-inclusive Italian resort named Positano. He's in full-out dad mode in his vacation gear. And I know this look all too well because my adorable 74-year-old mom goes on these senior trips and she rocks a fanny pack like it is her damn American right. So Farrah has assigned Michael to pop the question in the Emerald Grotto. She says because it shines green, which is a sign of richness and money. This is so Farrah. It's not about love or companionship or feeling complete with someone. It's about money. Again, let's just let that whole business investor thing I talked about earlier simmer in your mind, all right? I think Lindsay Lohan might be doing the same thing, allegedly. Well, fast forward to the next day, and Farrah has arranged for some expensive vintage limo car thing. All I caught was that it was a 1960 model. And it's driving them to go take a boat to the Emerald Grotto. Deb's OG is with them, and somehow no one has pulled knives on each other yet. They get to this beautiful boat, and Amy and Michael are all smoochy face. I want to like Amy, but she's got to have some issues to find Michael attractive, right? Like, I just feel like Michael always has coffee breath just on the verge of halitosis. Deb, Sophia, and Farrah are on the front of the boat. I don't know what that's called. And Farrah instructs both of them to leave Michael alone. Don't bother him because he is going to propose to Amy later. It was probably a wise decision to wait to tell Sophia because then she wouldn't have time to plan a oopsie. I thought I saw Starburst drowning, so I pushed Grandpa down into the sea to save him. And then the wave will come and they'll die. So they get to the grotto, and this is when I thought maybe there's an Italian body double standing in for Farah, because this Farah smiled. Her face looked so different when her mouth turns up. Like, it usually only does that when she ugly cries, but this was different. She was giving Michael tips on where to propose and when and how to do it. Maybe it's the Italian air, the wine, the olive oil, fresh pasta, those crazy Italian tomatoes that Deb talks about. Whatever it is, bottle it up, put it in a capsule. That's what Farah needs to take with food at every meal 3 times a day. They get inside this cave thing, and then there's this shuffle of where everyone's going to sit. Michael and Amy go and pick a boat to sit on away from Deb. Smart. And then Farah asks Sophia if she wants to sit with Deb or go with her. And Deb stretches out her arms and says, "I want my Sophia." And then with a cold as ice shrug, Sophia just turns and walks to the next boat. I'm telling you, this girl is Stewie Griffin's dream girl. Farah and Sophia end up sitting across from Michael and Amy on their little dinghy. And with the weirdest body angle for a proposal, Michael turns to Amy, then turns on his phone with the brightness all the way up to full blast, places the phone on her head, and recites a poem he wrote. Now, I only got so far as to write, "Roses are red." And then I was laughing and cringing too hard to finish it. It was so awkward. He was just staring at his phone the whole time. And then when he slid the ring on her finger, they were still sitting next to each other sideways, like they were taking a staged photo. It was just strange. And then you just see Sophia's matted hair and Farah's huge phone in their faces. I mean, could you imagine getting engaged and then looking up to see baby Goop staring at you? Back on land, Deborah has decided to go over the top to show how happy she is for them, which really means she is so pissed off and angry about this engagement. Come on, we know Deborah at this point. We've allowed her to reintroduce herself. See what I did there? And we know that she has some anger and resentment simmering inside at all times. So she's gotten them this gift. It's a serving platter. Maybe it's just a decorative dish. Either way, it's large and colorful and ugly and totally impractical. And now they're going to have to lug this piece of shit back with them to their petting zoo. That thing would be up on my local garage sale site in no time, or just dropped off at the Salvation Army on the way back from the airport. Later at brunch, Deborah is going crazy inside. She keeps talking how they should have a joint wedding or a joint something on the beach. How many women get to be there for their ex-husband's engagement? Now, this reminds me of a high school girl trying to convince herself that she never liked that boy that turned her down anyway because she has a new boyfriend, George Glass. I also loved the subtle dig about, "This meal is so carb heavy. I'm not used to eating all these carbs like you, Amy." Okay, Deb, we remember how Farah paid for your facelift and your lipo, so you can stop pretending your sudden face swap is because you used some organic coconut oil or some shit. Now, we almost make it through this trip so close without a major smackdown, but here we go. Farah has to point out that this trip is better than the Key West trip when she had it out with Dr. David. Sophia pipes in too, but I try not to look at the screen too much when Sophia's on because she has eyes like this painting of Jesus that my grandma had in her house growing up, and its eyes used to follow me. And Sophia's eyes do the same thing, but in a Chucky from Child's Play way. Well, they put a kibosh on this the only way the family knows how, with Deborah saying, All I know is I love my family and my Sophia. And then Farrah continues to enjoy the trip through her camera function on her iPhone by recording every detail of it instead of actually enjoying it in real time. You can say the same for her sex life. Heyo. All right. Last week we saw Caitlin getting her IUD out. She's just so ready to get pregnant. But now remember, she's not going to tell Tyler that she's getting it out because he wants that big surprise moment with a box and a Batman costume or something. Now they're so busy with their new kid's clothing line that Tyler is stressed the hell out. Queen Kim comes over and they have that fast-talking conversation that they like to have together. And he tells her that he's just so overwhelmed with this new clothing shill, the new house renovations, we got Butch's addiction in there, and Caitlin, that he just can't sleep. And this lack of sleep is just making things worse. Here's where Kim suggests sleeping pills, which I don't think is a terrible idea. I'm not saying, hey, let's get Tyler a prescription for Ambien. But, I mean, maybe a little Benadryl or Tylenol PM. Maybe I'm way off base, but I don't know, just something to help him nod off. Well, Tyler freaks out at this idea, and he starts talking like he's a trained neurologist and he's studied slices of cadaver brains under a microscope. I mean, who knew our brain talked like this to the other parts of the brain and then they just freak out? Well, before he goes popping any pills or melatonin, he thinks maybe finding a spiritual solution or focusing on himself might be good. Okay, not a terrible idea. Church isn't necessarily my oasis, but maybe it is. Or just meditating. I get it. But then he drops the line about going to a treatment center for self-reflection. Are there really treatment centers for self-reflection? That sounds more like a Real Housewives yoga retreat to me. I feel like he and Caitlin view treatment centers as vacations from real life. Now, I know Caitlin has gone to one for depression recently and thoughts of suicide. Honestly, good for her. But correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know if I'm getting confused with Leah Messer hyphen Sims hyphen Calvert hyphen Messer and or Teresa Jewadice, but didn't Caitlin go away to stress camp once too? Just here's a better idea. Both of you, go to a real therapist, not the shitty one that you've been seeing since season one in that weird hotel room. They should be seeing separate therapists for individual counseling and then another one for couples counseling. Social workers, therapists out there, am I right? Like there's this conflict of interest if this so-called therapist that they've been seeing, or maybe they don't see her anymore, if she's seeing them both individually and together, that cannot be right. I just think seeing someone local for them is going to help a lot more than flying off to Arizona or Malibu every time they feel stressed. Especially because the reason Tyler says he can't go is because he can't trust Caitlin to be alone for 3 weeks because she can't mail packages out. I mean, really, I believe him, but it's just not that hard of a thing to do. You see what orders come in, print off a label, you pack it, drop it off at the post office, or I'm sure they can pick it up. I mean, hell, doesn't Kim even work for the post office? Like, she'll just tell you what to do. Fast forward to a scene in the minivan. It's 3 p.m., which means the time of day Tyler hits the wall and is so exhausted from his lack of sleep. I get it. All of us moms out there, we've been there. That's the hour. You're just done. It's also snack time for Kate, so she nibbles on her index finger and thumb for some mid-afternoon protein pickup. And Tyler keeps hinting at needing to sleep. But since it's not about Caitlin and her wants and needs or head pats, she's just, yeah, whatever, and ignores him. She really is a self-absorbed person, isn't she? I just don't think it even occurs to her to reciprocate anything to anyone. Finally, Tyler just leans back his seat and he's going to get a few minutes of shut-eye. But Kate and Nova just continue to loud talk and scream. Like, both of them are the worst. Well, now they're in Detroit. They call it D-Town. We like to call it Detroit. Now they're meeting up with Alexa and Haley again. This friend is just weaseling her way in for a permanent friend spot. Tyler's sister Amber and her son are also there. We haven't seen Amber in a while. And all the friends and their teen mom kids are there to be models for the new season's fashions. Turns out Kelly Dodd from Real Housewives of Orange County is their photographer. She's snapping away and she is on a mission to get some good shots and then get the fuck out of there before she catches an unexpected pregnancy. She asks Tyler if they have any outfit changes and he's like, nope, this is it. And Kelly's like, oh God, thank God I can get out of here. But then friend number two pipes in and says, no, you have two more. Oh, and then there's some cardigans and some more shirts. And you just see Kelly's eyes roll all the way back into her head, all the way back to OC. Then we get Caitlin not being able to find her car keys. She's tearing the wagon apart. She says she put them in her pocket and she thinks they fell out. Well, Kate, maybe if your jeans weren't so fucking tight, they wouldn't pop out of there as fast as the fucking Go-Gurt does every time I peel one open for my kids. Scenes later, friend one finds the keys in the wagon. I'm not understanding why basic shit like this is so hard for Caitlin. I don't know if I need to feel badly for her or be concerned that she has some sort of delay, but it's annoying as fuck. Later, Tyler is taking Kim to see the new Octagon house and to check on the renovations. Caitlin is super anxious to move in, but it's not as easy to complete as Caitlin thinks it is. Like, you see what I mean? She wants everyone else to get their shit done, but she doesn't do jack shit herself. We got a super quick look at Kim's little tiny pocket husband, Bill. I'm happy for Kim. She and Mr. Bill deserve happiness. I'm all for it. Tyler and Kim catch up again on his sleep and stress issue, and Kim questions whether it's because Tyler is just too successful. I mean, you guys, yeah, you should be proud of your kids, but let's be real here. He's on a show called Teen Mom. He didn't finish school like he crowed about for years. He didn't even have a job until he started this online store. Is it that successful? If this Tierra Rain line is open for more than another year or two, let's all go in and open one together because I'm amazed that they even have more than 10 orders. Then they start having this fast-talking emotional debate about self-esteem and childhood and being a good mom. Lots of tears and psychobabble. We'll just have to see what comes of Tyler's quest for a stress camp for online clothing boutique owners in the Midwest. All right, moving on to Macy. No Ryan and Mackenzie this week, right? Yay. I wonder if it's because Ryan was not feeling well, so they canceled filming. Per usual, Macy's scenes are monotone and boring. It's their first wedding anniversary tomorrow, and Taylor's planned something special for them to get out of the house. I can't lie, I was totally jealous and coughing like a pay attention kind of cough at the mister during this scene. And then Amber calls to tell Macy that she's pregnant. Macy's trying to act like she's happy for her, but it was a pretty weak attempt. Then she takes out their wedding cake out of their freezer. It still had the topper on it. Like, wouldn't you at least take that piece off? And it sure looked a little freezer burned too. Now, I am a sentimental gal, but I had no desire to save our wedding cake. I sliced that shit up with the rest of it. Ordered a small cake from the same bakery, same flavor, year later, boom, no regrets. Turns out Taylor ordered a limo to take them to dinner. God damn it. My jealousy was on a level like 6.7. Then they had champagne in the limo, and Macy was just like, oh, thanks. Like, bitch, do you realize how lucky you are? Just a thanks? I would think Dave was driving me to my Bon Voyage ship off had he had champagne in a limo. Like, he's adopted me out to a Polish family who's hard of hearing. I can clean as much as I like with them because I love it. And I can bitch and complain all I want because they can't hear me. Like, see ya, kick me out the door. So then they get to this restaurant and they're clearly buzzed. No fault there. I mean, shit, if my kids were taken care of, I was in a limo, I'd be getting my drink on too. But then it got super weird because they started talking about having a baby. Oh no, she doesn't want to be pregnant. Then they talked about adoption. And then Macy was saying that she didn't want any more babies. No way. This back and forth. And then all of a sudden, she's like, well, we need to do it now, if you know what I mean, if you know what I'm talking about, staring at him. And then Taylor gets up to leave. So at first I was like, am I missing something? Are we supposed to know what's going on? Producer steps in and asks what we're all asking. What was that? Turns out Macy had a miscarriage last year. It was a girl. They named her Dandy, short for dandelion. That is horribly sad. She says she thinks it's important for people to hear about it and for it to become okay to talk about. But Taylor is clearly pissed or hurt. I don't blame him. I mean, way to throw off this whole night he's planned with your agenda to educate us viewers of Teen Mom. Maybe talk this over with him first. Like Taylor said, maybe start by telling our parents before millions of randos like us. So she just looks at him and says, are you mad? Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, yeah, he is. Lastly, we have Amber. She's starting to feel better, so they're off to meet up with Kiki and some other person. I apologize for missing who she was, but I was caught up in staring at Andrew, trying to figure out what species of Chewbacca he is. So Amber tells grown-up Curly Sue that she's pregnant, and this woman keeps insisting that she's joking and telling Amber to shut up. Yeah, same. And I loved when she made Amber cop to the timeline of when and how they met and when did she become pregnant, because this is so soon after Matt. Now, after picking her jaw up off the boardwalk, she is able to mutter out, I'm so happy for you. I would love to hear that conversation alone between Kiki and Curly when Amber left. I mean, to be a fly on the wall in that production minivan. Back at Grandma's bungalow, Andrew is sitting outside waiting for his first one-on-one scene with that annoying producer. He saunters up to Andrew and starts in with the girl talk. So tell me, what's going on with Amber? Andrew says he thinks Amber feels bad for holding up the trip with all her morning sickness. Am I the only one that just thinks Amber's acting normal? Like, she's always in bed sleeping and moping around. So Andrew tries to convince the masses of us suckers still watching this damn show that it's the universe pulling them together. Actually, his direct quote was, I feel like something gravitational is going on. Yeah. It's called gravity. It's what's keeping your gigantic sweaty man boobs and Harry and the Henderson's feet on the ground. He's excited to have spawned another paycheck. Oh, I mean Teen Mom baby with Amber. But he hasn't thought about how to deal with his family learning of the pregnancy before tabloids leak it. I actually do not believe that. I think he and Amber love the thought of them being the focus of a tabloid leak. It's us against the world. I mean, it's Matt in a gorilla costume all over again. Later that afternoon, our eyes are forced to feast on Andrew in full hyperthermia. He has sweat through his collared shirt, and I'm sure his underwear are just turning into cottage cheese. He's decided to cook steaks and sides for his pregnant girlfriend who's been throwing up bananas and water all day. Yeah, cool idea, Einstein. That medium well sirloin is going to be a blast to throw up later. Later, Kiki comes to sit down with Amber. Why do I not trust Kiki? Tell me your thoughts on her, because I smell something on her that I can't put my finger on. clearly to me she's a former addict, but there's something else that's up. Well, in a coconut shell, because it's Hawaii, they talk about how crazy it is that Amber is pregnant. Amber says she's scared because she knows how much work it's going to be to take care of another human. Really? You're in Hawaii while your daughter is being raised by her stepmom and dad. Watch your words, Amber. She doesn't want Andrew to move to Indiana because she wants to live in Malibu with him, but she can't because of Boo Boo. You know she wants to live in the boo without Boo Boo, but she won't only because of this little show and the millions of people that watch it. I mean, we know. So of course, Andrew is going to move to Indiana and be unemployed and live off Amber, even though Amber says he's not like any other guy she's dated because he has a job and he's stable. God damn it. Open your eyes, Amber. So Kiki asks her, what about all those meds you were on? Oh, you mean the ones that kept her stable, in control of her bipolar or borderline personality, and or kept her sober? Easy. She quit those a month ago because she was feeling good. She doesn't need them. Amber, you were feeling good because of two things. Number one, the meds were making you feel better. And number two, you were on an emotional high from falling in love or lust. Everyone feels good when you're in that phase of a relationship. As soon as the reality of a newborn sets in, holy shit, it's gonna rock her world and shit's gonna hit the fan. Last scene of Amber and Andrew are on the beach where he's setting up chairs and umbrellas for them. I promise you, it's the stuff like this that Amber is falling for. You think he's going to be kissing your ass and, are you okay, baby, all the time in a few months, Amber? No. Andrew's going to get tired of taking care of a lazy Amber just like Matt and everyone else did. Then Amber's going to be blindsided why her man doesn't want to baby her and wipe and kiss her ass anymore all the time. Amber loves the falling in love stage. Not the normal, everyday relationship boredom stuff, right? I also loved how Amber is making this pregnancy like she needs to walk on broken glass. She needs to see a doctor because her stomach's already hard. Okay, isn't she like 5 weeks pregnant? Come on, Amber. It's probably just constipation you're feeling. The only scene we get of Gary and his stomach are in the car with Christina, when he tells Leah he loves her less than he did when she was a baby. Emily's cuter than you when you had your time. I love you second best. Good old Gary. All right, Claremont Apples, I will be back tomorrow for a recap of Married at First Sight, and I'll be tweeting tonight during the show, so maybe I will see you there at RealityTVPod on Twitter. I also hope to get another bonus episode up on patreon.com/realityvpod this week. And a huge thank you to those of you who left incredible reviews on iTunes. I try to find you and thank you on Twitter and Instagram, but if I haven't found you or I couldn't tag you, I am thanking you here. Thank you, thank you. Love you, mean it. And for everyone, keep trudging through the week. We're getting there. And stay salty.